Thanks for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. This week, Pastor Janetta continues our series, The Habits of a Christ Follower.
My name is Janetta Herrera, and I'm one of the pastors here at this church, and I'm also part of the teaching team here at Olathe Wesleyan. And we've already been told, but last week, Ken started us out on a new series called Habits of a Christ Follower, and he talked about the H, which was hang time with God. So as I looked at the hang time with God, I thought, what changed this last week because of learning that or of focusing on that hang time with God? This man who was a pastor that I had not had any conversation with since last March, but he and his family kept coming to my mind all week. Just all week long they kept coming to my mind, and it was like, well, is this a prompt from God, or is this just me being nosy? Why does that name keep coming to my mind? It's like, maybe I should reach out. Guess it's not going to hurt, right? So I just Facebooked him and said, hey, I haven't talked to you since March, but you and your family kept coming to my mind. And usually when somebody comes to my mind like that, usually, it means that maybe I was supposed to be praying. And then I go, y'all okay? You doing good? That was it. And I sent it. And I got this immediate response back and said, no, not doing good. I feel isolated and I feel shunned. I think that was God talking to me about this person. And I wonder if the reason that I paid attention to it was because of the emphasis that Ken put on the H last week, hang time with God. I wonder if I would have missed something. I know that when we do hang time with God, that there are going to be certain things about us that's going to change. It's going to change. You cannot spend time with God and it not change something about you. It's impossible. So I looked at this week. Actually, I want to go back to something else that Ken said last week. Last week, he made a statement in the sermon, and he mentioned God wants us, or wants you, me, us, to grow up. Now, don't judge me, but the thought immediately that came into my head was, but I don't want to. I don't want to. Because if I want to grow up, that means that I become responsible for my own spiritual growth. And I'm not always sure that I want to take that responsibility. Then in the same thought, it came, but I don't want to be a person either that just stays as this imbecile in their Christian walk. So if I'm going to grow up, then practicing these habits that we've been introduced to is going to be majorly important. Practicing the habit of hang time with God is going to matter. And practicing this next one that's this week is going to matter. And it is the A, which is called accountability with other believers. Accountability with other believers. So just looking at the word accountability. Well, first off, if you Google it, it's not in there because it will use these words. It's the act of being accountable. Well, what in the world does that tell you? Nothing. So you have to go and look up accountable. And do you know what accountable says in the dictionary? It means that a person is required or expected to justify their actions or decisions. You're expected to justify or give a response for your actions or decisions. And I was like, yuck. I don't think I like this word too much. It puts me a bit on edge. makes me feel like I'm always having to be out there, you know, to give an account of what I've said and what I've done. So I'm not so sure that I like this accountability with other believers thing, if that's what it means. You know, I've lived around the country. And it seems that every locality where you live, there is a saying that kind of describes that part. And that saying is a way of, if you look at it carefully, it's a way that we have used it to put a wall up and to keep other people out. No matter where you live, there will be this kind of saying. Let me give you an example. We lived in Virginia, and we talked about the Southern hospitality, which is the nicest people you will never know. You ever heard of that? You got to live there. The nicest people you will never know. Great Southern hospitality, but here's the wall. Or we could go to New England, and we could talk about being Boston strong. You know what that says? Don't need you. Oh, there's another wall. Or we could move to Michigan, and Michigan says, we are union. You know what that says? Not your job. Keeps the wall. Not your job. Or as Ken pointed out, more specifically, you could be in Grand Rapids, which says, if you're not Dutch, you're not much. Do you know what that means? Got my circle and you're not in it. Here it is. So what about in Kansas? Do y'all know what it is here? Anybody? Really? We're called Kansas Nice. Kansas Nice. In March the 26th, there was an article written by Gina Kaufman. Now, I am sure with the name Kaufman that they're related to the Kaufman, right? And Gina wrote this, it's a great article, about Kansas Nice. Here's the definition. A uniquely Kansas behavior that gives the appearance of kindness, helpfulness, or interest, but which belies a true attitude or feeling of envy, anger, disinterest, or apathy. Ooh. Oh my goodness. Then she goes on to explain 9 characteristics that describe us. When they are in full blown, means that we are showing our Kansas nice. Here they go. We show polite friendliness. We have an aversion to confrontation, a tendency to understatement, a disinclination to make a fuss or to stand out. We have emotional restraint or self-deprecation. We envy people behind their backs. We have a resistance to change, and we show passive aggressiveness. So I looked at that stuff and I'm like, oh my goodness, there's our wall. Our Kansas nice. Okay, that is a locality. But what about us personally? How do we erect barriers to keep people out? What keeps us from letting our guard down when someone is trying to hold us accountable? I came up with some. I think we have a barrier of shame, guilt. If you really knew me, I mean if you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. And maybe you would even leave me if you really knew me. We have the, it's none of your business. You keep your nose on your own stuff. This is my stuff. Anything else that we do to erect walls to keep other people out?
Our busy schedule.
Very good. We'll stay so busy that you can't come in. Any others? We can do it on, that almost sounds like that Boston Strong thing, doesn't it? We can do it on our own. I don't need you. I'm capable. Don't want our weakness to show or review it as that.
I think in Kansas, just from my perspective, is there's a lot of you have to look like me, act like me, work in the same kind of field, you know, to be in our little group kind of thing. I don't see it where people that feel comfortable coming in if they're not just like what they expect to be.
My goodness, that almost sounds like if you're not Dutch, you're not much, doesn't it? So that we have our own little circle that says, okay, this is, if you're not like me, it's right here. So we keep that wall up that other people can't come in, but what do we do to when the wall is erected around somebody else and we don't go that way? What are the things that keep us from going through somebody else's wall? I think it could be the same. I fear that if I push, you'll walk away from me. So I'm not going to go into that wall. Or we could just go, well, what do I know anyway? Right, I got my own stuff. What do I know anyhow? Or we could say, again, none of my business. What you do is your business. What I do is mine. And we leave it at that. I don't bring it up because I won't be liked. It's such a huge risk to push against that wall of somebody else. Because I do not know how you are going to respond. You might respond to me in anger. You might respond to me by throwing something that I've done back at me. I don't know what you're going to do. And there is a million interpretations to explain what it is that you will respond if I go against that wall. It's a risk. Because I'm out of control of your behavior coming this way. So in summary of those two things, we develop a defensive posture both towards accountability and being held accountable. It goes both ways. But maybe these walls that we erect exists because we don't have a true understanding of what accountability means. Exactly. I mean, look at that. Look at the definition on the wall that we first had. It's like, I don't like that. That's almost like just being attacked all the time. So maybe I don't really understand biblical accountability. Maybe I don't understand accountability according to what's put out in scriptures for me. And maybe I am judging accountability with other believers in that little box of that definition. So what does accountability for a Christ follower look like? Let's look at this first verse. Ephesians 2:19 says, "So now you are Gentiles who are no longer strangers and foreigners. You are citizens along with all of God's holy people. You are members of God's family." God created us all. And it says, as a person that He has created, He wants you to belong into a family of God with other Christians. Okay, what does this have to do with accountability? We're to be in a part of a family of God. So I'm thinking, family of God, what does that mean? What does that look like? So I asked my kids, thought, the only way I would know what family means is let me go to them. Hey, guys, what does it mean to be a part of the Herrera family? Here's what they've come up with. By the way, that's my Herrera. Well, it's not all of them. That big picture right there is the Cockrell family. And in the Cockrell family, there are four siblings. There's my sister, Jo, who was a Spencer. There's my brother, Jeff, who carried the Cockrell name. There's my other sister, Janice, who is red wine. And then there are the Herreras as a Cockrell. Of the 30, 16 of us are Herreras. Do you know what that means? That means we outnumber everybody. No matter what, When we show up, we more than double the amount of people that are there. And by the way, we're not done. I still have 3 kids to get married and more kids to be having kids. So we are big in number. We are powerful in number. That was one of my first ones. You know what another one is that they said? What does it mean to be a part of the Herrera family? It means you give and receive back scratches, arm scratches, back scratches, and arm scratches. In fact, if you are a Herrera, all you do is you come up and you sit down like this and go, scratch my back. It's expected that you will scratch, and then in turn, you turn around and do them. Scratch my arm. That's part of being in the Herrera family. Another thing they said is we are very loud. We are very loud. We are very loud. We are very loud. There are times I have to go to the neighbors and apologize because we are very loud. We're very expressive. We talk loud. We all talk at the same time. Do you know what it's like to have 16 people all talking at the same time? If you visit our house, you'll know. We're very loud. People automatically think we speak Spanish. They come up to you and go and start talking. One time came up to Gilbert and started talking in Spanish to him. We were sitting down, he turned to me and he goes, what are they saying? You know, he's like, oh, I don't know. Another thing about being in a family of the Herreras is that we are extremely close. Even in cars, there's always room for one more. We can pile more people in a car than you can imagine. We can put more people in a hotel room. You think it would take 3 rooms? Uh-uh, we can get it into 1. We are close. In fact, if we go out to a place and somebody gives us a big house or all these different rooms to stay, we all go, let's just all get together. And we put the sleeping bags all out and, you know, we're all together. We are very close. Another thing about being in the Herrera family is we are nosy. But I think that's a good thing. Of course I would. I'm a Herrera. We are short. And we have a thing that's called Herrera time. Herrera time means you never eat before 8 o'clock. It's Herrera time. You come for supper at 7 or 6, and we'll get around to it. We have Herrera time in the evening. You know what that meant? That meant as kids going to bed on time, and that didn't happen at our house either. And then another thing came along that was really cool that they said. We're very accepting and generous. You see, being a part of Herreras, there are certain expectations. In fact, next picture, Herreras. Did you see him in the back of the picture before? Yes or no? It's because he's a 7th cousin, twice removed from Gilbert. But I expected him as a Herrera to do his job in that inning and bring it home for the Royals. There's an expectation for Herrera. In fact, when they put Herrera in, I said to everybody, well, it's a Herrera. They better do it. And Jared wore his Herrera shirt today. It says, I'm not superhuman, but I'm Herrera. We have expectations when you join or are a part of the Herrera family. Well, what does it mean to be a part of a family of believers? Do you know what the family of believers is called? It's called? What'd you say, Nanette? It's called the church. When a family of believers gathers together, it's called the church. We here are a family of believers called Olathe Wesleyan Church. And as a family of believers here, there are expectations for this family. One of those expectations is found in Galatians 6:10. It says, as a Christ follower in the family of Olathe Wesleyan Church, we are to let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong in the family of believers, especially to those in the family of faith. We are to do good. What does it mean to do good to all people? I got to tell you, I saw this lived out Friday night, doing good to all people. I saw Todd and Emily Sherman sitting right over there in that table, just raise your hand, who wanted to watch the game the Royals chose to play last night on Friday night, and the weather chose to go cold. In the midst of the Royals playing and the weather be cold, you saw Todd and Emily out in the parking lot, Emily all bundled up with her hat and everything around, but welcoming cars and people in for the movie night. That's doing good. I saw Bill Groh, who is the big motorcycle guy. I saw him give up a game and come to just socialize with people. I saw Nanette, raise there, give up her sleeping bag that kept her warm to a family that came and didn't have enough blankets, and she froze till they left. I saw Peyton Herrera. Is she in here? I saw Peyton as we were all sitting watching the game. She came up and she says, "Nana, there's a lady standing back there. Shouldn't we go and invite her up and welcome her?" I went, "Yeah. Do you want me to go with you?" She goes, "Yeah, come with me." So we walked back there, but Peyton's the one that said, "Come here. Come on up. I'll get you a chair." So the 10-year-old picked up a chair, walked around, put the lady up by the fire so she could watch the game. The lady said, "Will your group do this again?" That's doing good. I saw Pastor Ken respond to a text on Twitter. Remember I said we're loud? Well, the noise was loud, and the text came through and said, "Boy, it's loud from my house," or something like that. Ken could choose to be upset with the person, or said, "I'm sorry. We don't want to hurt any ordinances. Why don't you come join us?" And that started a conversation that said, "You mean I can? You mean I can be here?" That's doing good to all people. It's going to look all kinds of ways. But it means you're looking for people and ways to do good. So what does it mean in the second part of that verse where it says, especially to those in the family of faith? What does that look like? That means especially we care about each other when you come in. When you're not in, we care when you're missing. We care when you're sick. We care when you have financial issues. We care when you've won $1 million. We care, and we're there. And we do stuff enough to show that we care, that you matter to those that are around here. So as a Christ follower, we do good. As a Christ follower in the family of Olathe Wesleyan Church, we have mutual accountability. Look at this verse. Romans 12:5 says, "So it is with Christ's body. We are many parts of one body, and we all belong to each other." Oh, crud. There's that belong to each other. Do you know what belong to each other means? That you hold each other mutually accountable. There's that word. Accountable again. I'm not sure, like I said earlier, that I even like it, but Scripture says we belong to each other. So it doesn't matter what your uniqueness. I can no longer say you don't fit my circle, or if you're Dutch, you ain't much. I can't do that. It means I have to welcome in anybody and everybody into my family. It no longer can be this. It has to be this. It means no matter. No matter the mental capacity, no matter the color, nationality, education, economics, no matter. So we can't do Kansas niceness that Tressie said that says, "Wait, you got to look like this. We got to be like this." It's an expectation of behavior as a Christ follower in Olathe Wesleyan Church. It's an expectation. Ray Ortlund, I think I have that, said, "A Christian who is not committed to a group of other believers for praying, sharing, and serving so that he is known as he know others is not an obedient Christian. He's not in the will of God. However vocal he may be in his theology, he is not obeying the Lord." That's a strong statement. That's a huge, strong statement. Kind of reminds us back to what we talked about in the last series about obedience being key. You see, obedience means you belong with a family of believers for the purpose of doing good and accountability. So there we go again, mutual accountability. What does that mean? What does it mean? When you look at accountability in scriptures, it involves much more than me just telling you you're overeating and watch your diet. It involves a lot more. It involves encouragement. You see, we have to have encouragement to grow. I have to have encouragement to grow. When we come together, we are supposed to encourage one another to do good, to do things that are pleasing to God. As we encourage each other, that means that we can help people move down that line. Do you remember that line? From a pre-Christian to making a commitment to Christ to growing in their faith. When you are encouraging people in their walk with the Lord, you are helping people to move to that right. It's important. We have to look for ways to encourage people, though. I saw this week that one person dropped a book in the mail for somebody that was extremely discouraged. I have seen a family bring in food, a huge amount of food on Wednesday nights for the people that work in Clubhouse, because most of the people that work in Clubhouse go from a job to Clubhouse without any break for food, and they brought food in. Nobody asked. It was just done. Do you know how that encourages those that are serving? But it's not just about the obvious ways to encourage. It's about keeping your antenna up so that you recognize things even when it's not obvious. That you learn to look in people's eyes. That you learn to look past the wall, or you learn to crack through the wall to say, what is it that if I just gave a tad bit of encouragement, people could move? We have to keep our antenna up. We have to see how to connect somebody who's hurting with something or someone that will help. But in order to really encourage, not the fake encouragement, but in order to really encourage, you have to know each other. You have to know names of each other. You have to know what makes them hurt. What they're going through, both good, bad, and ugly. You have to know. That's the basis of any relationship, is to know. To know. This last spring, I was exhausted. I was exhausted. I was exhausted emotionally. I was exhausted physically. I was exhausted spiritually. I was exhausted mentally. I was done. I would tell Gilbert, I just want to leave. I just want to get out. I'm tired. Could have been self-induced being tired. Not saying that. Could have been things that I took up on my own shoulders that God never intended me to take on my shoulders. I don't know. Could have been that I didn't have that time alone. Could have been it was just the way life was right then. But I was tired. In the midst of being tired, Ken said, why don't you guys go out to Washington, and you can explore what we're going to do with our, you know, for our mission trip for next year. I'm like, well, okay. Yay, I get to go away. That's cool, and Gil gets to go too. In my head, I'm going out there. I'm going to teach this. I'm going to be at that church. We're going to do this. I'm still going to be tired. But at least I'll be tired somewhere else. So we get out there. After I get out there, I find that Candy, that's you, lady, raise your hand, that Candy had arranged for Gilbert and I to just spend time to sleep, to ride around, to just be with us. I don't know if she knew it because she was a pastor's kid, or if she knew it because you could see it on my face. All I know is that she responded to it and gave us rest. Encouragement comes out of relationships. And relationships mean that we know each other. And that we don't just come in and out, but that we know each other. It matters. When we connect together like that, we are stronger. Look at this verse. Two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two can stand back to back and conquer. Three are even better, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken. I don't understand sometimes why this is such a hard concept to grasp. We aren't to do this spiritual life alone. We are to be connected, because you know what that verse said right before this one? It says, when, not if, when one falls. When one falls. So it's expected that as we go through life, we are going to fall. But when we go together, there's another one that will help there to pick us up. When we're discouraged or hurt or happy, that we can celebrate together. You're not alone. There is strength when you're not alone. So accountability involves encouragement. It also involves correction. Oh, crud, I'm not sure I like correction. That's those comments and actions that will cause me to change my behavior. Look at Proverbs 27:17. As iron sharpens iron, a friend sharpens a friend. So the worst thing that you could do to me is to not sharpen me. To leave me out there to figure it out by myself, or to let somebody who is not connected to me point it out. A friend sharpens a friend. So why are we afraid? Goes back to those things at the beginning. Our walls go up both ways. Look at Hebrews 3:13. It says, you must warn each other every day while it is still today, so that none of you will be deceived by sin and hardened against God. While it is still today. What are the risks in this? Like we said at the beginning. But do you understand the beauty of this? If as a group, a family of God, as Olathe Wesleyan Church, if we practice this, it's beautiful. Because when I fall, I know that you're not there to kick me. You're there to lift me up. And then the next time you fall, I'm there for you. It's something that we do for each other. And being in the family of God, when we're committed, is not a place for superiority. This doesn't mean I got it. No. It means that we all understand that none of us always got it. That all of us have times in our life when we need grace. How cool. How beautiful to know that all together we are there because we all need grace. But we also give that correction. This week in the office, I can't even remember who was being snarky. I don't know if it was me or Ken or Jim or if it was all of us, but we were. And Carol comes in and says, "Stop. I have two questions. How does this behavior benefit our family, the church? Second question, is this behavior Christ-like?" Do you know what? It was like, ouch. But who said that iron sharpening iron didn't hurt? But Carol loves me. Carol's committed to us. So for that friend to tell me was grace. Unfortunately, here's what happens. We fall because of sin. And sin causes us to experience shame, guilt, and isolation. Sin is glamorous for a while. But afterwards, when we start to see the results of it, after sin goes down, it becomes bitter. In retrospect, we will go, oh, if only. But when we do those if onlys, that causes us to hide from God, to hide from others, to move to isolation, and then do you know what wins? Sin wins. That is not how the family is supposed to be. We need to encourage each other regularly because hiding is exactly the wrong approach to sin. Wow. The right approach is help. I can't do this alone. Help. Galatians 6, 1 and 2 says, "Dear brothers and sisters, if another believer, is overcome by some sin, you who are godly should gently and humbly help that person back on the right path. And be careful not to fall into the same temptation yourself." Don't get arrogant. Just help and bring back. Accountability involves encouragement, correction, and power. Accountability is power. It's power. Look at this. Matthew 18, 19 and 20 says, "I tell you this, if two of you agree here on earth concerning anything you ask, my Father in heaven will do it for you. For where two or three are gathered as my followers, I am there among them." This verse is power. When two or three of us are together, we have a supernatural power. And we have the promise that God will help us through it. It's powerful. It reminded me of a quote by Aristotle. Not the Aristotle that goes here to church, but the old Aristotle. Aristotle's quote, "Together we are greater than the sum of its parts." We're powerful. We need to be spending time together, praying, reaching out, encouraging, correcting. We've got to do that. That is a powerful thing. You know what the result of living this kind of accountability, not the definition one, but this kind of accountability is? The result of that is it attracts other people. You're going to go, what? Look at this next verse. John 17, 20 through 21. I am praying not only for these disciples, this is the one back then, but also for whoever will believe in me through their message. I pray that they will all be one, just as you and I are one, as you are in my Father and I am in you. And may they be in us so that the world will believe you sent me. How does the world know about Jesus? By looking at us. By looking at us. By interacting with us. By seeing how we act in accountability. By encouraging, by correcting, by seeing the power. It is amazing. I just wish that we all could understand it. Do you know what it's like? It's like that we are all here and there's a fence up. Not really, but like a fence up around us. And the people are coming that aren't a part of knowing Jesus and a part of the family. They come up and they look in the little corners of the fence and they go, what? Look how they help each other when they fall. I know what that person does. And they're acting like that with them? Look! They're helping you to be better by telling you this. This is amazing. Look at that. Oh, that I could be a part of it. Oh, that I could be a part of the accountability, the gospel accountability. Oh, if I could be a part of that. That's an amazing thing. When we're in that kind of accountability, we are all in the game together. I am a Hoosier. So the Colts, when they came from wherever it was, they came there, and they weren't so hot. And then Peyton Manning came along, and Peyton's pretty cool. No comments. Peyton's pretty cool. So when he got traded to Denver, oh, wasn't too happy. I have a granddaughter named after Peyton Manning. It's like, what the world? And then Peyton goes up to Denver, and he does sometimes good, sometimes bad, but overall he's done really good. But it seems like no matter how good he does, when the reporters come in to talk to him, they still make it, you know, you're an old man now. You're going to still be able to do this? And it's like, hello, I just won a game. Do you still have to come to that? When you're going to quit? You're an old man now. You know, your body's not going to take this much longer. No joy about what I've done. Well, it was one interview, I think it was last year, I tried to find the one interview when the reporter was doing that, and Peyton goes, hush, you have no skin in this game. You're just a couch potato. No skin in the game. But you see, when we understand accountability and we practice that, we got skin in the game. We aren't couch potatoes. We're in this together. What are the expectations of a growing Christian, Christ follower? Hang time with God. Accountability with other believers. So I ask you a question. In your hang time, how's it going? Are there changes occurring in your life because you are spending time with God? Accountability with other believers. Start asking yourself a question. What kind of person am I? Am I one that keeps my walls up? Am I one that's afraid to push against somebody else's walls? Why do you come on Sunday? Because you got nothing better to do? Nothing else going on? Do you come to connect with other people? Do you believe that we are a church when we come together? Do you believe that we can prevail? Do you believe that we can help each other grow in their faith? What is church? According to the Bible, it's not a place just to pop in and out. It's not a place to be a couch potato. It's not a place to just be that spectator that can give the, you should have done this. It's a place where you have skin in the game. It's a place where you practice these things together, where you get to see the power of God through a group of people that practice it together. So my challenge this week, will you choose to be voluntarily accountable? Will you choose to let yourself to be known and intentionally seek to know others by being accessible, vulnerable, committed? There's a huge desire that we will love God so much that we want this. Let's pray.
Thanks again for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. To learn more about us, visit us at www.olathewesleyan.org or visit us on Sunday morning at our 10:30 a.m. worship service. Thanks again.